Good afternoon, I should say almost, and thanks for coming. My colleague is also in the audience. Dr. Althaus was a figurehead and colleague in doing this research. This research really culminates my dissertation efforts at the University of Delaware. And what I chose to look at, as Laura said, I was first educated as a social worker, so I always consider myself a social worker first, and I was most concerned with people in poverty. And met a professor there at Delaware that was incredibly energized about the media and saw a way for our two passions to coexist, and this is the result. Whether we like it or not, whether it makes us happy or not, local television news continues to be the number one source of information for most people in the U.S. That is even over the internet and continues to happen year in and year out. The coverage of what's covered on the local television news has the most impact for those most in need in our society. Though it is the primary source of health information for those in lower socioeconomic status, and specifically I examined looking at the diseases that most impact those in poverty in the U.S., which I'm sure everyone in this room knows is heart disease, lung cancer, and diabetes. One assumption that I start with in this work is the role of media in a democracy. So for this presentation to make sense, you have to sort of get on board with me that in a democracy, the media has a job, and that job is to inform the public. And we cannot have an adequate democracy without that. Okay, so that is the point that I started from. And I did neglect to say this, but I, too, have no relationships to disclose whatsoever. So if we are coming from that perspective, we all know, again, especially for those of us in this room, the countless and endless studies that poverty affects health status, and that effect being largely negative. You have the lower the socioeconomic status, the higher the mortality rate from heart disease, lung cancer, diabetes, and other serious illnesses. The higher rates of mortality from nearly all of the cancer diagnoses. The higher death rates for men, especially prematurely, and that basically if you take the lowest third of our population based on income, they're at the highest rate for premature death. So poverty and health really don't go along. What else do we know? We do also know that given information, people make changes. I think it's Oprah that was quoted, Maya Angelou, who said, "Those when you know better, you do better." Okay, very words of wisdom, and proven by this study. The study was conducted in both Europe and the United States, had 4,500 patients. Shock upon shock, they find, what do you know? If you receive the information, nearly 50% of the patients made a positive change. And nearly 75% of those who made the positive change had a positive impact on their health. So I posit the theory that if we had information out there, there could be a positive impact on people's health across socioeconomic statuses. Oh, wrong way. There we go. Sorry. Okay. So then I asked the question, or I posed the question, why look at local television news? As I stated a minute ago, most popular source of news in the United States, health information can improve your health status. We know these top three diseases are causing the cause of death for folks in poverty. So I asked the question, is it a substantial source of health information on these three specific diseases? And I don't think I will shock any of you when I tell you my findings, which was a resounding no. I had the joy of watching 14,849 local television news stories, hence my glass prescription is about tripled. The University of Delaware acquired these stories from the Project for Excellence in Journalism, and they did a nationally stratified random sample of news markets across the U.S. And so these 14,000 stories came from years 1998 and 2002. Out of the 14,849, I feel the need to say that to sort of validate those years of watching TV, only 876 focused on health. Out of the 876, 51 total talked about the top three causes of death for people in poverty. So those results even astounded the most cynical of researchers. 7,600 of the stories were from 98, I neglected to say that, and 7,100 roughly were from 02. They were from what was considered a sweeps week, which is the week of highest rated television, and a non-sweeps week. And I categorized all these stories based upon topic, and I will go through a couple of those. Not surprising, I think, again, to folks in this room, the news leads with crime stories. That's how they start, right? Breaking news, somebody got robbed, we got the banner going, we got video, we got swirling lights, now we've got people's attention, right? So there was sort of this predominant theme after watching these broadcasts, that it was sort of this concept of, I'm going to scare the living daylights out of you. And then I'm going to bring you in and I'm going to make you feel good about the warm puppy that got rescued from the sewer. All right. It was unbelievable how it was just repetitive in that way. But almost 30% of all the news stories shown were crime related. About 24% was what I labeled a public issue, so something that would affect the general public. 22% was the warm, fuzzy dog and sewer stories, the human interest. And a mere 6% were health-related in any way, shape, or form. When you look at that 5.9%, you break that out. As one of the presenters alluded to, about 16% of those 6% stories focused on infectious diseases, AIDS, common cold, influenza. Again, risk, we're going to scare you, we're going to scare you. About 10% were denoted to cancer, but very little on lung cancer whatsoever. And these results really follow the majority of studies out there on the local television news. As I just said, those statistics, these years, as many of you may remember, was the years of Viagra. And Viagra accounted for a lot of these news stories. And I put that under a cosmetic treatment, if you will. But diet and fitness, that was a little joke. I'm glad you all caught that. I was joking there. Okay, good. But there's your breakdown, okay? It's good to all have a sense of humor even at this time of the morning. That's good. All right. So what do we know? We know that health stories are not heavily included in local television news broadcasts. We know that out of these 51 stories focusing on heart disease or lung cancer or diabetes, they had a median length of about 29 seconds. In news world, time equals money. So the more time denoted to a topic, the more value placed on the topic. 29 seconds is, as I say here, 6 seconds shorter than the median of all other news stories. Another shocking statistic from this study was that there were 12 markets that had no health stories whatsoever. Health stories made up less than 2% of the time in 10 of those markets. Block placement is another variable in news production. That first block is what you get before the first commercial. Second block is after second commercial, and so on and so on. Most of the health stories, at best, were in the second block, typically in the third or the fourth. All right. Similar to the theme I was talking about scaring and risk and all these things, very similar in terms of these health stories. They focus on the risk of them, but not on any information preventing them or treatments. So telling you that you're at risk, but not doing a lot to tell you what to do with that risk. These stories of the top three causes of death were fewer in nature, were shorter, did not appear in a variety of markets, and as I said, primarily were in the last portion of the broadcast. One of the ways that we sort of examined the data was to look at the markets and look at the percentage of people living below the federal poverty line. And so I separated the markets into what we call low income, i.e. a high percentage of people under the federal poverty line, and then high income. And I looked at those health stories to try and see if there's any difference. Again, in the low income, they're focusing a little bit on prevention, but a lot on health legislation. On the high income, you're looking at the EPIs, the cure, and potentially the top three causes of death. So it's a little bit reversed when we should be talking about the top three causes of death for people in poverty in the low-income TV markets. Okay. And as I said, those in most need of the information were least likely to receive it, sad enough. Okay, so the conclusions. Local news, as I've said, is a popular source of information in the U.S. It has, unfortunately, a very small proportion of stories on health, and you're talking and then even a greater reduction in proportion on the top three causes of death for people in poverty. What the information that's out there is not particularly useful for those in poverty as issues of access or issues of treatments, and the local television news is a great market to transmit health information. In terms of public policy, I was really interested to see one of the previous presenters, the station she chose for the analysis, because prior to the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996, there were over or close to 300 owners of the media. Post-1996, you have five. You have five voices. So although you might be picking different networks or different mediums, you may still be getting the same parent company delivering the message. So looking at these sort of the Telecommunications Act of 96, did we really want to relax public interest regulations that much? I argue no. In terms of advocating for better news coverage and then also getting stuff that's more salient to the people that are watching it. In terms of future areas of study, where do the news get their stories from? Are they all prepackaged? Are they from a parent company? I didn't have information based on that. Interesting enough, they would often spend a lot of production costs in these health stories, but yet place them at the end of the broadcast, which was counterintuitive. So I had some questions result about that. And then basically, how can we all mobilize to advocate for change? And I thank you for your time.
Panelists again for their very informative and engaging presentation. So thank you very much. We have about 5 minutes for questions, so I wanted to open it up to the audience for questions for the panelists.
Yes. It's not a question for the panelists too, it's looking at the African American men and their influence. I was wondering, asking them if they think that they're influenced by video, it just doesn't necessarily seem like the best way to subject. I was just wondering, did they consider other ways, like finding out their recall of videos or how how many hours they spent watching videos or how much they liked videos or, you know, all those kinds of things, which I think as a researcher I would be more interested in to look at correlations versus they felt they were influenced, because we often don't feel we're influenced. I mean, I just find that would be truly suspect.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So just to repeat the question she was asking, one, did we ask any questions about recall or exposure to videos versus just asking their own perception of whether they were influenced by music videos? Is that right? Okay. So to address it, one of the things, it is kind of interesting to ask people their own perceptions of whether they're influenced. And I actually was surprised to see that it was pretty much a 50-50 split, because 50% of the men reported that they were. But actually in this study we didn't ask about recall and details and specific timing of exposure details. It wasn't the primary aim of the parent study, and so this was kind of a sub-study that was of interest to look at. And so in the future with a full study, we would like to know more detail, I think, about what that actual exposure is, and be able to look at self-reported and then also kind of a more objective measure of what that exposure because is and how that might relate. And we do have some exposure questions, but not necessarily music videos in general. It goes very specifically to different kind of genres of music. So, yeah.
Other questions? Yes.
For Jenny Peterson, I'm curious, I think you may have covered this, but I missed it. What backed up your definitions or your coding for what portrayals were stigmatizing?
Right, so the portrayals that we included as stigmatizing were being portrayed as headless, as an isolated body part, from an unflattering view, consuming unhealthy food and beverage, sedentary behavior, and wearing inappropriately fitting clothes. Out of all of the categories that, and characteristics that we coded for, those were clearly negative, whereas the positive were being portrayed as a professional, eating healthy food or drink, and engaging in exercise. And we adapted our coding tool from Hoyer et al., which was recently published in Journal of Health Communication, that did the content analysis of photos that appeared with obesity-related news. So we did clearly distinguish those as negative and those as positive. Does that answer your question?
Kind of. Were those then constructed by the researchers, or were they validated in some way? I mean, to make intuitive sense to me, I'm just curious whether you have any data to back up the actual impact of
Right, so the actual impact of pictures that portray individuals in that way, we grabbed from Hoyer or from McClure et al., who specifically tested obese individuals that were engaging in sedentary behavior, eating unhealthy food, and portrayed from the rear as an isolated body part or as headless. They did show that weight bias or anti-fat attitudes increased with exposure to those. So that's how we categorized those characteristics as stigmatizing.
Yes, right here in the middle.
I have a question for Cheryl Lynn. How many people were in your study? And also you mentioned that the FDA does not have to pre-approve direct-to-consumer prescription drug advertising. Mm-hmm. My understanding is I thought their deep math division did have to approve that.
They are required to submit their advertisement, but they could start showing them. And so sometimes even the when the FDA found some misleading information or inaccurate information, part of the advertisement has already aired. So they would have to recall or require them to reshoot some correcting advertisements. There are 268. It's a random sample online survey.
And maybe one more question in the back?
Yeah, just to combine the FDA talk with the last talk, the people who really know about marketing are Hilton Moulton and the drug companies. I don't think they forget the data. For example, one technique that the drug companies have used is video newsrooms. So that would be one way to get from public or some other to develop video news. And I would just say that the framing, my framing would be different. When you say crime, I'm thinking General Electric. I don't think any of those are GE's. Maybe you might get 200 felons. Okay? So every time, if you were a real human being and they did a story and you were convicted of 250 felons, that would be the lead.
Right.
It's never mentioned when they do a story about any of the real criminals.
Right.
And I would frame the disease differently. I wouldn't say the disease. food in your water, and corporations who produce pollution causing lung disease. So the framing of those stories and the way you frame your questions, you give it up. You give it up. You've given it up when you frame it as the name of